Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
Can we get Dustin to shut the hell up now?
It might have been the greatest sporting moment as a fan in my life.
Usually, I think it goes without saying, the best crowd of the year.
Joseph, you son of a bitch. I don't know what his play calling was in the last. Oh, that was terrible.
As far as, you know, neutral fans, you guys, watching that game, was it as enjoyable as, you know, like, what was, like, was it a great game to watch?
I liked it. So. I actually liked it, man. I'm not a big Lady Gaga fan, but I thought it was interesting. It was entertaining.
Of being able to maintain a high level of play up until 38, 39, 40 years old. But they pay the price when they hit the wall.
You think Melo goes to Cleveland?
Oh, please. Are we still talking about this? Are you serious?
I will say that this weekend we witnessed the GOAT.
You're goddamn right. Bill Belichick.
We witnessed the GOAT. It's Bill Belichick, not Brady.
Most epic comeback in history, or is this the most epic collapse in history? Or is Tom Brady just that goddamn lucky?
For greatest of all time, at an individual position, individual stats weigh more to me than a team accolade.
The point has always been it's the combination of the stats and the championship that make it the best.
When you find that magical algorithm, Joe, and you can print it on a piece of paper and then send it out to the world, we'll worry about it. But everybody's going to hold different things at different values.
Like Steve Carell looked creepy with a mustache. I didn't care for that. I found two pictures of me that show that I'm better looking than Tom Brady.
Okay, all right.
Fuck you, Chris.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
That is still the best opening ever.
Yeah, I still think it's kind of funny that that Dustin says algorithm. I just thought that was kind of
what?
Algorithm.
Algorithm.
Yeah,
he's an algorithm. Fancy word.
He talks that way. Yeah, he thinks he's all smart with his algorithm stuff. Well, yeah, there you go. See, oh, that's the beauty of Jeremy being out in public today. He can't curse.
Ah! Yeah. What are you in, like, the lobby or the waiting room there? Is that where you're at?
I'm actually sitting in the room here with my very attractive wife. Who's,
wow, what dedication.
Yeah.
In the doctor's.
You said that very, you said that, like, very kind of almost sarcastically.
No, it wasn't sarcasm, damn it. She's good, really good looking.
It sounded sarcastic. Joe, didn't that sound sarcastic?
It did, but I don't think he meant it that way. I just think Jeremy has sarcasm dripping off his voice no matter what. But I don't think
he
intended it to be that way this time. Yeah.
Sounds
I don't
like
think
a
there's
little
anything behind it.
From Chris.
Oh, I'm a little jealous. Janet's a cutie.
Thank you.
I need her to leave you, Jeremy, and come to me.
Oh, keep dreaming.
Do you?
Joe said you need to leave. You need to leave. Me and go
I'm not a home wrecker.
She's smiling.
Oh, that's
she's,
good.
She's
you're
not
happy.
I don't know. She just had a knee put in her arm. Made me want to puke. Oh, God.
I'm not used to this subdued Jeremy. This is this is interesting.
He's very 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 low
melon.
Sounds like
melon
he's low energy today.
It sounds like he's taking a lot of medicine and he's just really sedated.
That's how I feel when I watch the Yankees.
Oh!
They look great.
Can we arrange this every week, by the way?
Great.
Can we arrange this every week?
Well, CeCe looks good in game two.
Oh.
CeCe fat ass, yeah. He looked good. What else? What's your record now? I haven't even looked at the standings yet.
He beat the Rays.
One and two. We play tonight. So
he beat a Triple A lineup. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So tell me this, guys.
There it is.
Being a pitcher for the Yankees has to be, or at least being a starting pitcher for the Yankees, has to be one of the best jobs in the league. Think about it. You're a starting pitcher for the Yankees. Listen, their bullpen is good. I would say their bullpen is probably top 10, but their starters,
absolutely,
not so much. Hold on, but here's the thing about the Yankees, okay? If you're a starting pitcher for the Yankees, they're going to tell you, all right, go out there, throw throw 85 pitches in 5 innings, boom, come out, you're done. If you're a Yankee starting pitcher, as long as you go out and you don't allow more than 3 or 4 runs in those innings, and that offense can stay in bed, all you got to do is pitch 5 innings. You got to have the best job in the world making that kind of money.
Well, Chris, you know, I don't know about it being the best job in the world, because there are some pitchers, and there's one on the Red Sox staff, who want to go out there and not just pitch 85 pitches. They want to go out there and pitch a complete game, shutout, no-hitter every time. They never want to come off the mound. They don't care what the score is, what their pitch count is. And we have a guy named Chris Sale, who is that guy. And I want to get back to the Yankees in a second,
What was your offense the other day when you guys were 0-0 in the 11th inning with Pittsburgh?
Pitiful. The Red Sox offense, they've had 2 3-run home runs. That's been the majority, and they've scored in only 2 innings in the 2 games that they've played, and 2 3-run home runs, they're really all their offense. So that's been bad.
In their defense, listen, they're playing against 2 very good pitchers, dude. Cole won 20 games a couple years ago. Talon's going to be just as good as him, so it's not like they weren't facing a good team.
Who was the first guy we faced?
Garrett Cole.
Oh, Cole, of course. Yeah, he's
surprised.
Very good. Yeah, the other guy was.
Talon's
really
got
too.
Just as good stuff, man. Well, they would have won the game if Leon didn't run through the stop sign because he's an idiot.
I know, I got thrown out at home. But was not Chris Sale absolutely everything he was cracked up to be, bro? I mean,
I wish they scored some runs for him.
I know. I was like, welcome to Boston, Chris Sale. This is what they do to their aces. They don't score runs for him,
I don't like now we're getting the flu bug is coming now, and Betts hasn't played like 2 games. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. Brock
Ramirez
Holt
is out for today's game. Yeah.
Yep. I don't know. But, hey, listen, the Yankees are 1-2. If those 2 losses, Chris, fill me in. I honestly have not followed the Yankees 3 games closely other than the Sabathia win. So these 2 losses, what happened?
Well, the first game was the worst opening, like the worst opening day performance by a Yankee pitcher in history, with Masahiro Tanaka just getting shelled, allowing 7 runs in 2.5 innings.
He looked fantastic, by the way.
Mr. Tanaka is supposed to be our best pitcher, supposed to be our ace. It was gross. But then the offense couldn't do anything either.
Came back to life.
Gary Sanchez has been awful too. I mean, he's 1-10 or
you're
something
surprised?
Like that.
You're surprised?
Well, no. I mean, it's the beginning of the season. I mean, think about it. If they're going to play every single day from now until mid-September, it's a long time to get going. I actually fully 100% expected
Sanchez again.
I fully expected him to sort of go through a little bit of a slump at the beginning of the, in the beginning of the year. He only played in 45 games last year, 60 games, something like that.
Yeah.
Like he came up after the All-Star break. So, I can fully expect there to be a little bit of rust there with Sanchez. Yankees sit here right now.
Rust.
At 7-2. The first game was 7-2. They sit here at 1-2, rather. In the first game, it was that 7-run performance. The second game, CeCe comes out and blanks them. I mean, CeCe comes out, pitches, 5.5, I believe it was, and just totally dominated that Rays lineup, which Joe has already called AAA lineup, which it's pretty much.
A quality outing against that lineup, I think.
You probably could. I'm not even denying that. the only guy in that team who has done anything, who he kills, by the way, he kills us every time, is Longoria. And Longoria is sort of starting, you could make the argument now that he's sort of washed up, that he's sort of fallen off a little bit.
Not
the Yankees.
He's a Red Sox killer, too.
But he kills us every single time, and I'm like, what the hell? So then, So then after that, let me pull up the other games here. Yankees schedule. Okay. So they lose the official schedule, shall we? Which I love saying it that way. I prefer saying it that way over other ways. But
I can tell.
Okay, April. I want the previous games. Give me the previous games. What the fuck? Well, anyway,
I'm gonna look it up faster than you.
Basically, they lost one and then lost. So they're 1-2 right now. Oh, here it is. Scores. That's what I'm looking for. Scores. Scoreboard. And it's just the Yankees have been relatively consistent offensively. And when I say relatively consistent, I mean consistently poor offensively. You look at their they can't hit right now. And with their, you know, their pitching staff not really coming through for them either, they're in some trouble here. And, you know,
But I was going to say, yeah, I mean, preseason, you were saying, and the pundits, the analysts were saying that the lineup is where the strength of the team lies right now. The pitching staff is
the
big question mark.
Well, here's the thing. The Yankees got five runs on 9 hits in game 2 against the Rays. Okay? So 5 hits. They got blanked 7-3 in the first game, also had 9 hits, but only 3 runs. They allowed 13 hits to the Rays, okay? In game 2, when they won that 5-0, like I said, they had 9 hits. Where is it here? Boom. Right here. Like I said, they had 9 hits, but only allowed 5 for Tampa Bay, okay? Then the next game, they lost 4-1. They had 8 hits on 4 runs, 1 run on 8 hits. So I don't necessarily think it's the case that they're not putting the bat on the ball. I think it's the case that they're not getting guys on base.
Right, the runners in scoring position average is probably not that good. I don't know. It takes a while for the hitters to come around. That's just how baseball always seems to be. You know, in April and May, the hitters are behind as far as being prepared and getting into the rhythm of the season as compared to the pitchers. Pitchers tend to be – that's why you see a lot of pitchers come out and have these, 7-1, 8-0 starts, and then second half of the season it starts to, balance out a little bit because the hitters start to come alive. And when the air gets warmer, the ball tends to jump better. You have these cold weather games like what we're having up here in Boston, what you've had in New York, and all this and that. Those are pitchers type of games. It certainly helped with Sale on the mound the other night. It was not even 40 friggin' degrees in Fenway Park at night in early April, and Chris Sale dominated. I mean, he was awesome, but the conditions certainly didn't. Chris Sale didn't need any extra help, but the conditions helped that out. So I think that's part of it. So listen, being as objective as I can be, I hate the Yankees as much as anybody, any Red Sox fan, but I still stick to the fact that I think that offense is going to be, something to contend with going forward, despite a slightly less than stellar start. The Red Sox offense, hey, I live in a glass house right now if I'm going to rip on the Yankees offense. I mean, the Red Sox offense, it's only a 2-game sample. The Yankees, it's only a 3-game sample. I mean, this is what we're talking about here. But, the Red Sox have not looked very good. And, the whole thing about without Big Poppy in the lineup, where are they going to get that production? Well, they're not. that's going to fall off. But the hope is that somebody like Hanley Ramirez steps into the leadership void, or Mookie Betts steps into the leadership void. But you just can't get that production back. So the Red Sox offense is naturally going to take a step back from, the great offense that it was last season. But I think I see in the Red Sox much better balance between a good lineup and a really good starting staff. The bullpen edge has got to go to the Yankees at this point, although the Red Sox bullpen is still a work in progress, but it's nothing to sneeze at right now. So I don't know. I mean,
you got that right.
Thank you. I don't know. I mean, are we still thinking the Yankees are going to be bottom dwellers in the AL East this year, or do we
no.
think it's more like Tampa Bay? No, we're thinking the Yankees are going to make a step forward this year, right?
Yeah, but what's a step forward? 85.
I'm not saying
wins.
They're going to win the division.
Maybe.
But I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, if they go.
I'm not saying they're going to win
85
the division.
Wins. But. Yeah. I mean, 80.
I could probably see 85.
Well, that would be a step in the right direction. That'd be a step in the right direction. But they're not
Definitely.
Striking fear into anybody yet.
Yeah, you're not. I'm telling you right
well,
now.
Well,
it's
the
this
third
is
or what,
record.
Fourth game of the season.
You're not going to win without starting
I
pitching,
heard,
man. Can't win with Tanaka giving up 7 runs, dude.
Nope.
Yeah, but he's not going to do
nope.
that every game.
I know.
How about Severino? Not, he's pitching tonight. What's what's your thoughts on him,
yeah,
Chris?
They're playing Baltimore. Baltimore's unbeaten at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So. But.
All right, well.
Real quick question for you. Quickie. It's a quickie. I know you like quickies. That game, I wasn't really paying much attention the other day, but did the Red Sox end up losing that game?
No, they won. They won
a
walk-off home run by Sandy Leon in the 12th inning, and I stayed with it all the way
Sandy.
Through it.
Joe, did you hear his
Sandy
afterwards
Leon, huh?
talking to Garen Austin? I couldn't understand a word he said.
No, I did not hear that. Heavily accented. Do you need a Spanish translator? Is that what it was?
It was horrible. It was horrible, man. I still can't figure out what he said.
That's the last time they'll ever put him on Nesson. Unless he gets another walk-off, they'll have to, but...
You bet.
But, I mean, listen, as a Red Sox fan, the best thing that happened was Chris Sale. I cannot get over how awesome he was. I mean, listen, look, the guy, not beyond the fact that, you know, he throws 697, his slider is just otherworldly. It has movement on it that I haven't seen before on a slider.
It's a white
Yeah, totally. And it's got it dives and it dips. Oh, it's fantastic. And then he's got that little sneaky little changeup that darts away from righties and in on lefties that comes in at 89 miles an hour, off of a 96 mile an hour fastball. I mean, that's unhittable type stuff. But all that aside, the stuff aside, he's so competitive out there. Like, he pitches so fast. He gets the ball, he looks in, gets a signal, just goes into his windup, whips the ball to home plate. Repeat, rinse and repeat, over and over again. Strike out, pop up, ground out. You know, I love that kind of pitcher who just goes out there and he's just interested in getting the pitch and executing the best pitch he can and getting off that mound as fast as possible. And that's what Sale does. And I love his competitiveness.
That.
I love his attitude out there. I really like what I saw in Chris Sale beyond just the stuff.
They talk about Sale. He's like the model pitcher because people should watch because he takes like 2 seconds to throw the ball. Everybody else
true.
Is ridiculous. Yeah,
it's true. He just stands there, gets the ball, gets a signal, and pitches. And it's a beautiful thing. I think that we may have the next guy, you know, in Red Sox, in the lineage of great starting pitchers that really started with Roger Clemens, that ran through Pedro Martinez, ran through Curt Schilling for a little bit, for a year or two. Ran through John Lester for years, Josh Beckett, then John Lester. But this guy, I think, is closer to the Pedro Martinez, but he's closer to the Martinez, Roger Clemens level.
You're going to say that Pedro Martinez is one of the Red Sox greats in the history of the franchise. Okay.
This guy has the potential to be that good. He has that ability. He's at that same age that Pedro was when he came in here, 27, 28 years old. If he can stay healthy and stay under contract, this guy could be the next great Red Sox pitcher for the next 10 years. He's got that makeup.
You want to know my favorite Pedro memory?
Well, throwing Don Zimmer to the ground.
Nope.
Who's your
sitting
dad?
Sitting in Yankee Stadium. Yeah, sitting in Yankee Stadium and having 50,000 people chant, "Who's your daddy?" at him.
Yeah.
That was my
He made his own bed there, because after he lost the previous outing, what did he say? He goes, I guess the Yankees are my daddy. It's like, oh, man,
yeah.
He should have said that. Chris Sale, I think, is going to be fabulous, and I'm really excited to watch him. Appointment viewing every outing going forward. I think this guy's electric.
Well, yeah, he's going to be fantastic, but we knew this. This shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. I mean, he was fantastic in Chicago.
Right.
You know? The one issue with Chris Sale isn't, you know, his talent, his ability, you know, how quickly he releases the ball, this and that and that. The thing with Chris Sale is he's a freaking psychopath. Okay, he's a lunatic. And you don't know how long that's going to hold up, especially in a city like Boston, how long he's going to be able to keep a composure. Let's say he comes out, he has maybe one bad start, one bad outing, whatever it may be, you know, because every pitcher has one, and, you know, starts to implode, and that Boston media starts to get on him a little bit, because Boston and New York are the two roughest cities for that. He just folds up like a freaking bad hand in poker. You never know, you know?
Well, I hear you on that.
Because in Chicago, nobody cares about the White Sox. The White Sox haven't been good since they won the title in 2005. Nobody gives a shit. So, you know, it's that is a Cubs city out there, especially now. So he didn't have kind of pressure to perform in the White Sox, you know? So
nope. Yeah, but I think
so. Now he's got that pressure in Boston. Yeah.
Yep.
So,
but
here's the thing
I'm
for me: as much as you guys liked it, as much as you guys liked when he destroyed the jerseys, and you're like, "Oh, that was such a badass thing," and blah 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 blah. I mean, no. Like, go out there, wear the jersey, and pitch. Like, is an extra millimeter of fabric really going to affect your throwing motion that much? And know what? Yeah, but you don't destroy them with a bowling knife.
I got something to say about
that.
Well, yeah, that was an overreaction. I got something to say about that uniform thing. Yes, it was a crazy reaction, but I saw a picture of the uniform, and his complaint was that his pitching motion is going to be hindered by wearing this uniform. When I saw a picture of the uniform and then I watched him pitch the other night, I think I see what he's talking about. The way he pitches and the way that uniform – it was an untucked uniform, and it had a lot of extra stuff floating around on it, like big sleeves, big pants, a big shirt. His pitching windup
– it
Yeah, I know. His pitching windup is kind of like, you know, turkey jerky with a lot of moving parts. I could see how wearing that uniform would certainly bother his windup. I actually can. I mean, it might be BS – totally, and he might just be a psychopath. He didn't want to wear them. But
listen,
I could see his argument.
You are making more money than 99% of Americans are going to see in their life. Okay? You're making more money per year than more of those Americans are going to see per life. Go out there and pitch the damn game. Okay? Plus, just because you don't like the uniform, what if everybody else liked it? What about the people who came to the stadium expecting to see a throwback jersey, wearing their own personal throwback jerseys, expecting to have the promotion that day, and all of a sudden the White Sox have to scramble last minute with their uniform guy, with their clubhouse technician, or the hell he's called, because all of a sudden they're sitting there with stripped of uniform, and they got to scramble and find their original ones 15 minutes before game time. I mean, it's like, I understand if this were a long list of incidents, and he did this kind of shit normally, then I could understand, you know, oh, geez, okay, Chris Sale. I know what a lot of the arguments are going to be. Oh, well, it was one time. It was one time. Yes, but
listen,
who does that, you know?
I mean,
the Red Sox the Red Sox wear their throwbacks, so you don't have to worry about that with the Red Sox. But they've had the same uniform since the beginning of the organization. So, you know, but
the
thing is, it's like, why, like, what – Here's
the thing.
If I were a player on his team, that would have pissed me off. I'm just saying. If I were a player on a team, I would have been like, dude, what the hell is your problem?
Probably. You're probably right about all that, the player and all that stuff. But where I disagree with you is to just go out and play, because
you're not allowed to disagree with me.
Yes, I'm going to have to. If the uniforms were going to get in the way, and like if he's a high-paid starting pitcher with huge expectations, he has huge expectations for himself. if he's being asked to go out on the mound wearing this clown uniform that is not going to allow him to pitch the way he wants to pitch, he shouldn't go out there. Like, he shouldn't go out on the mound if he's going
to
risk injury,
if
he's going to not be able to pitch very well because of this uniform. Like, he shouldn't pitch. Now, he shouldn't go cut the uniforms up. That's a bit extreme, okay? But I don't think he should have been asked to pitch. He should have that shouldn't have been the, if he couldn't pitch with the uniform, find another starter for that day. That would have been the move, you know? Cutting up uniforms was not the right move. But, Chris, this is what I like about the guy. The reason what really bothered him so friggin' much also about it was that these uniforms were a promotion, a money-making promotion for the team. And it was one in a long line, from how he tells it, of things that go on in the Chicago White Sox designed just to generate more revenue and not designed to win ball games. And this was just – I think this is like the straw that broke the camel's back. That's
well,
why
yeah,
he went so extreme. Well, yes, it is, but he also has to go out there and perform. But you know what, man? When you win games, business is better than it'll ever be. You can have all the stupid little dicky bobbleheads, uniforms, et cetera, giveaways. It's going to pale in compare to what business will be if you win a World Series. That's how Chris Sale sees it, okay? So he just wants to go out and he wants to perform and win. That's the priority for him. This business crap, these uniforms, all that garbage are getting the focus away from winning, and it got to a point where it was actually hindering his ability to pitch with these uniforms. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a straw that broke his camel's back, and he snapped, and he cut the uniforms up. He did something that, you know, listen, if you put a bunch of truth serum in him, he'd probably admit that that probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. But I think he was really, really pissed off about it. But I like that because this guy, he's coming into Boston. Yeah, he's a psychopath, and you're right, Chris. We'll see how he deals with it after a bad outing or two, and the media gets on his case, and talk radio is saying, oh, this guy, not all he's David Price again, not all he's cracked up to be, et cetera, et cetera. We'll see how he deals with that. But from what I've seen so far with this guy, he just wants to go out and win. And he's got this competitor, warrior-type mentality out there, and I really like it. And I think that's the type of mentality that does well in Boston. Not the super-sensitive, sort of touchy-feely guys like David Price, who get upset when a negative tweet comes out about him. I think Chris Sale's the opposite of that.
Well, I was going to ask you. I haven't gotten a chance to see him. I've been so busy covering, because our station carries the Yankees game. So I've been so busy covering them and what the hell's going on there. I haven't had a chance to see Sale pitch for Boston yet, whether it's preseason or not. Now, how did so he looked pretty solid the other night, huh?
Oh, it was. I mean, his stuff was awesome. I mean, the fastball was 90. He didn't walk a guy until the second to last batter he faced. His command was incredible. He struck out 7 or 8 guys. Nasty, nasty slider. Fastball popping. Changeup. I mean, it was everything he was supposed to be and more. And, you know, it was beautiful. The best stuff I've seen.
And this was in Fenway?
This was in Fenway, and it was the best pure stuff I'd seen on any starting pitcher.
They were giving him a good reception then, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Because Fenway...
Yeah, I think
Fenway...
he got a standing ovation on the home opener. Yeah.
Huh. Wonder what's going to happen when they go to Chicago and play the White Sox this year, if they're going to pitch him.
I hope they do. See, he's the type of guy who wants to go back there and you know, he would, like David Price is the type of guy who... Oh, I'm not so sure I want to pitch against my old team. Maybe I should maybe I'll tweet about it. Chris Sale, yeah, put me on the mound. I want to beat my old team. He seems like that type of guy. That's what I'm saying, and I think that's going
to
work.
It sounds to me like you have your reservations about David Price.
You think so? God, this guy, man.
I think so.
My God. Is Jeremy – no, Jeremy's lost the golf gone for a couple minutes. This guy – you know, he's on the DL right now, right? You know, this would be his start. Today's game, which starts in 10 minutes. This would be his first start of the year, but he's got a little elbow owie, which, trust me, is going to be his goddamn excuse for at least the next 2 months as to why, you know, well, every time after a subpar outing, it's going to be, well, we're still getting back to normal, I'm rusty. It's always going to be something related to the injury, whether it's still injured or he's just getting back into pitching form, or he's feeling his new arm, whatever the hell. He's going to have a built-in excuse machine.
Do you think we're ever going to see the David Price we saw in Tampa again, in Boston?
Yeah, I do. I think we will. And I thought it was going to be this year.
Okay.
Because he's not the Cy Young winner, Rick Porcello. He's not the new ace, mm-hmm. Chris Sale. He's now arguably the third starter on the team, right? There's very little pressure on this guy right now. Now, he's still got a $31 million contract, but he's not being relied upon to be the ace anymore. So I think if he has some subpar outings, as long as Chris Sale is doing his thing, David Price can kind of hide in his shadow a little bit, you know? I think, frankly, excuse me 1 second.
Thank you.
I was choking. Chris Sale coming to Boston was the best thing that could have happened for David Price because it takes the pressure off of him for being an ace. Because I really don't think in a big market, I think David Price is a 1A or a 2 pitcher. He's excellent, but you put him in a big market like this, and I don't necessarily think he thrives. So I think he's a little bit more suited to being your 2 or your 3 starter. Rather than your top guy. So I think this would be the year where we'd see the old David Price because he could just do his thing and not get, you know, not have pressure being an ace. But now he hurt his elbow, so it can't be the season. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be next year. Maybe we'll see the real David Price once he gets over his elbow issue come, you know, maybe
how about the David
June,
the Price
July,
Detroit?
August.
Are we ever going to see that David Price?
You know, it'd be nice. It'd be nice.
Now, who was more frustrating for you? As a Red Sox pitcher, as I eat my leftover Chinese food here in the studio.
Man, dying away.
The General Tso's chicken. It's good stuff. Who was more frustrating for you as a Red Sox fan, David Price or Clay Buchholz?
That's a tough question, man. That's a good one. That coming from a non-Red Sox fan, that's a really That's the type of question a Red Sox fan would pose. That's a good question. You know, right now it's David Price, but I mean, picture historically, I guess the nod has to still go to Clay Buchholz because there were so many years where I said, okay, this is the year for Clay. This is the year he's going to come out, put it all together, and win the Cy Young Award. You know, and then he'd come out and he'd be doing it, and then he'd get injured. You know, be 9-1 with like a 2.4 earned run average, and he'd get injured, and he wouldn't be the same. Or he'd come out.
Well, he had the talent. No.
He had the talent. That was the thing. He always had the talent, but he just didn't have the mental makeup, and he didn't have the physical. What's the word I'm looking for? Durability to pitch a full 34 game season. I mean, one thing David Price did last year was he started all 34 games. That's an accomplishment in this day and age. So Clay Buchholz was never able to do that. So it was for like 3 or 4 years straight, I was calling for him to have a Cy Young year. This is going to be his year. And he never could get it done. So it was years of frustration with him compared to just 1 year of frustration with David Price. So it's got to go to Buchholz, but tough call. Who?
Josh Beckett.
When he got here?
Just in general. Yeah, I mean, he was good in Miami. And then he was good for a couple of years in Boston. And then he just kind of just fell off.
Well, yeah, he had his first season here. It was a very David Price first type of season. He went like 16-12, which looks like a pretty decent. He won 16 games, right? But he gave up a shitload of home runs, like 30-something home runs. He had a higher run average. He was not the Josh Beckett that we thought we were getting, just like with David Price last year.
No.
Then that second year he came in, that's when he went 20-7 and led us to a World Series and lost the Cy Young Award to CC Sabathia that year, I believe. And he was awesome that year. I mean, after a certain point in the middle of the season, he was automatic. Beckett would go out there automatic. Mm. You know, 8 strikeouts, 4 hits, 1 run, 7-8 innings. And it was just every time out, same old. He was dominant. And he ran that all the way through the playoffs and the World Series. Now, that was 07. 08, he was still good, but he got injured. For those rest of those years, he would have a little injury that would sideline him, and kind of like what's happening with Price, you know, it would become like a two-month issue where he'd miss a bunch of starts. He'd come back, and he wasn't quite as good. Then he'd find his rhythm for like 5 starts. but he ended up having a really mixed bag of a season, and there were too many of those. So, yeah, he had an up-and-down career here. And then towards the end of it, he was, you know, the chicken and beer guy and all kinds of terrible things, and then they shipped him off to L.A. But he had a couple of good – good years here. And, I mean, you know, he almost single-handedly won that World Series in 07, so – some props have to go to Beckett for those first couple, 3 years he was here. He did some good things. But yeah, it's a good example. He certainly did struggle. It was very price-like his first year here. Very price-like.
What is your opinion on Trot Nixon?
Trot Nixon?
Yeah.
You mean from back in the day, Trot?
Trot, good old Trot.
I like Trot. He was a dirt dog. Yeah, liked
okay.
him, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, Trot Nixon. He was a dirt dog. That was kind of a random shout out, you know, random call out. I mean,
yeah.
I was talking
no, I
to
just,
07
just, his
Beckett,
name
so.
Just, yeah, his name just came up, and I was like, oh, I don't know where that popped into my head from, but speaking of disappointments in Boston, the Celtics climbed all the way up to first place. And like, okay, hey, with what, 10 games left, Boston could get the one seed. They could get, you know, the TD Bank North Garden could get home court advantage throughout if they survive. And you're like, this is crazy. Then they come out and get smacked by Cleveland. LeBron goes out and scores 35 and 15, I believe he had, just was on another level. And then they lose to Atlanta last night.
I know.
So now my question is Boston starting to fold down the stretch, or are they just kind of saying, listen, we're guaranteed pretty much a two seed, no lower than a three, but pretty much a two seed right now. Let's just kind of go out there, coast through these last couple and turn it on for the playoffs. Or are they just really not as good as we think?
Well, I don't know, man. That's a tough call. You got the questions today, Chris. I'll tell you, it's a tough call.
I'm awake today, and I'm in the studio today, man. I'm not sitting in bed on my phone today. Anyway,
right? Big difference. Well, it's a tough call, bro, because one of the things with the Celtics under Brad Stevens, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, is they play every game like it's, you know, game seven of the finals. They put not quite, but you get what I'm saying? They play really friggin' hard throughout the regular season. And that's part of the reason why they're the two seed right now. Because every game, they don't mail in many games, if any, at all. So what that can produce really good regular season,
though.
Well, and they could be. But I'm putting it out there that they might be a little tired right now because they bust their ass in the regular season. And look what happened last season. They had their best regular season in years, and then they get swept out of the playoffs by the Atlanta Hawks. They looked tired. Yeah. They were dealing with injuries to Jay Crowder, et cetera. So I think
and weren't they swept the year before against Cleveland too?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
back-to-back
yeah.
sweeps now. Yeah.
Or it might have been – yeah, either way they were. Yeah. So it might be that they are just tired and that's what the problem is, or – it might be that they have a couple of niggling. I don't want to say the wrong word here.
Niggling.
They have a couple of annoying little injuries. Avery Bradley. I'm forgetting somebody, but that they want to take care of right now. So they're putting it on cruise control. They're resting a couple of guys. You know, like you said, Chris, they have the two seed locked up pretty much. You know, so maybe now is the time not to enter the playoffs like they did last year, beat up and tired. They're trying to use this time period right now to rest up a little bit and get as healthy as they can be for the playoffs. That's what I hope it is. So I hope if they are cruising, it's for that reason. And the worst possibility is that they're just burnt out and they're done and they're cooked. That I hope is not the case. I don't think that's the case, but time will tell. I don't know. It's a tough question, Chris. Which
yeah,
I do not
okay.
have the answer
right.
for.
What about Christy Canyon?
What about Christy Canyon?
What's your opinion on that, on her?
Is she a porn star? I'm going to have to look her up. I haven't watched any of her movies.
I'm
going to
say, so I figured you're old ass money.
I missed you there, Chris. What'd you say?
I said she's from back in the day. Like, she's from back when, like, you know, she was, like, in porn when, like, there was dial-up internet. So,
yeah.
I mean, I figured you're – yeah, so I figured your ass might know who she is, your old ass. But now, speaking of the Boston Celtics, you guys earlier on in the year – well, this not speaking of the Celtics. This is speaking of disappointment in Boston. I'm going to flip the script here. And you guys had said earlier in the year you had your whole hashtag Fire Feral. Well, then you had your whole Fire Claude thing going on.
Mm.
And they did.
How's that work,
they got
though?
Rid of Claude Julien. And
sure did,
the Boston
baby.
Bruins have, the Boston Bruins have clinched a playoff spot. It's crazy.
Yep.
Like, they were the day that they fired Claude Julien, that team was left for dead, for the most part,
mm-hmm.
in the East. And they have since went on a tear. But I will give you this. I don't know if you watched the game the other day.
I did.
Brad Marchand should be suspended for the rest of the season and the playoffs.
He is. Oh, okay. Well.
And the playoffs.
He should be. You're right.
I mean,
he probably should.
One of the dirtiest plays in hockey.
Yeah.
Now, I enjoy a good hockey fight, and I enjoy some of the physicality in the action, but that was way over the line.
Hold on, Chris. It was a tap, admittedly a hard tap, to a guy's nuts. Is that really in the same category as a cross check to the head?
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when the guy went down and he came over and put his stick in between his face mask and
poked him in the face because the guy was flopping. You know what happens when you get hit in the nuts? You don't drop to the ground immediately. You curl over in pain after about, what, 10 seconds. That's when it hits, right? So if he was really, you know, like... I'm not excusing Marchand. It was a terrible, terrible penalty. At a terrible, terrible time. It cost him the chance to be a 40-goal scorer. It cost his team probably a better seed in the playoffs. And when the penalty was committed, I wrote about this on Fansided, when the penalty was committed... The game was 0-0 in the first. Well, it's my new blood.
Throw that in.
The game was 0-0 in the first period, and they hadn't even clinched a playoff spot at that point. Like, that's how dumb of a play it was. Like, you know, they fortunately, if they had lost that game and then lost to Ottawa, they wouldn't have clinched a playoff spot yet. Brad Marchand's name would be synonymous with mud right now. Like, as much as he's getting it for just doing that, what if the Bruins hadn't even won and they weren't even in the playoffs because of what he did? You know what I mean? That would have been really a really bad situation. But listen, what he did was childish, selfish, and stupid. Yeah, totally. And I would be too.
Yeah.
But the column I wrote was that Brad Marchand is too good to be dirty. He doesn't need to be doing this crap anymore. When he was a 5'9", 165-pound, soaking wet, 22-year-old rookie just trying to make the team. He did that stuff to – he was always a pest. You know that. He was one of the great pests in the game. He doesn't need to do that anymore. He's now become an elite scorer in the game, an elite talent, like an MVP candidate, the best left winger in the game. You don't need to be doing that cheap shot crap anymore. You could get that out of your game. You don't need it. It's not necessary. You won the job, dude. You know, you got it. But unfortunately, it seems as though it's part of his character. You know, doing something impulsive like spearing somebody in the nuts. That's just, you know, like, I don't know. Like, when do you ever stop learning how to – when do you stop being impulsive and dirty like that? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it's part of your nature, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that this kid, who's only 28 years old, who's just now hitting
he's
his prime.
Right.
Yeah, he's – right. He's got a good – easily 5 years ahead of him where he could, you know, compete for the Hart Trophy every year. He could be the best left winger in the game for the next 5 years running. But if he keeps doing this kind of crap, he's eventually going to get a half a season suspension. Or this is his fifth suspension. He's been in the league 6 years, I think. Like, dude, come on. You know, it's his eighth disciplinary measure, fifth suspension. That's a lot. For that amount of time.
That is a lot.
So
yeah.
he's playing with his career by doing this crap. So at one end, he's having the best season of his career. But at the same time, he does these things to undermine it.
So very New England-based show today for the most part, and until Jeremy gets back on, because I know he has to grind my gears. But the another thing that I've heard, I've gotten over my desk here at ESPN, is I heard this. Now, I don't know if I'm wrong or right, or this is correct or whatnot, but by the way, Joe, I just sent you a photo. Well, I'm going to send it to the thing here of where I'm sitting currently, and you can see like sort of what my what my day looks like at a minute. Currently,
I'll be looking
here.
For it.
But yeah. So freaking what did I say? Oh, I just got this across my desk. If by any chance through way of trade, if he leaves through whatever the hell may happen, if Malcolm Butler is gone, if he's gone, if it happens before and they do not start the season on September 7th with him, okay, for that opening game in Foxborough, there's a chance that they're going to try to get Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
Do you like the move or no?
Okay, I love the move. I love the move. Richard Sherman is a better cornerback than Malcolm Butler. Okay, hold on. I have a bad voice today. Excuse me one second. But, however, on Bleacher Report, their NFL lead writer, Mike Freeman, wrote this morning. He wrote a good call. I'm not going to read everything all up, but basically what he says is Seattle is playing with Richard Sherman. They're basically telling him that they're sick of his outspokenness. They're sick of his disagreeing with the coaches and management and mouthing off about it. They're letting him know that they can trade him if they want to. And they think that, well, the writer, Mike Freeman, puts forward that this is not really going to happen. This is Seattle sending a message to Richard Sherman that they're the boss. They're in control of his career. Not him. He's not the boss. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. But that's what he thinks. I would be shocked, I mean, to see the team that Richard Sherman has been spoken about being traded to happens to be the Patriots, right?
Well, you don't want to piss off Richard Sherman because he's a smart dude and he will leave. So he won't put up with that kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, you can play games, and again, this is not a racial thing, this is not whatever. I'm just saying that there are, you can play games with some of these dumb guys in the league. Some of these guys that are just kind of these street toughs who are, you know, just kind of are in it for the paycheck. But Richard Sherman is like a Monday morning quarterback, perhaps. I mean, Monday morning, he went to freaking Stanford, graduated for four years at Stanford. I mean, the dude is, you know, he's got
the
ahead of his
Tribune.
He's kind of an ass, and he's very outspoken and says some things that I'm just like, oh, geez, shut up, dude, you know?
Right.
But it doesn't hide the fact that he's very intelligent. And if they're going to try to, you know, if they're going to try to screw him over, I mean he's going to smell that coming, and it's not going to go well for them, I don't think.
That's a very good point. He is going to smell it coming, so if what they're doing is a psychological thing with him, then he certainly reads it. You know, he certainly understands what they're doing, and that would probably, someone like him with his ego, would probably piss him off. That's an interesting take, Chris. I hadn't looked at it that way. You know, I just read that this morning and I didn't really process it through too much. But yeah, if Seattle's trying to play games with Richard Sherman, they might be picking the wrong guy to play games with, you know, because he can probably play him better, or at least play on the same field, you know, because he's a smart guy. He knows these things. He knows what's going on. He knows how to handle the media. I mean, he's brilliant at it. He's outspoken. He speaks his mind. He does what he wants. And he could take his talents to South Beach, right? He could take his talents to Gillette Stadium, to Foxborough, right? I don't know. I would love to see him. If it was a one-for-one, Butler for Sherman, yes. As much as I like Malcolm Butler, Richard Sherman's probably the best cornerback in the game. He's still at least got a few more years where he's going to be at the peak of his power.
He's up
so,
there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's up there. For sure.
Yeah.
It pisses me off that he's up there, but he's up there.
Something, let me, NFL related. Chris, how do you feel about Tony Romo retiring? Has he actually retired? Or is he going to come back? He has retired.
No.
Yes, he's taken the job. I just sent that over, by the way. He's taken the job at CBS. He's going to be the head analyst at CBS. And, you know, what's funny is somebody who is sitting here in my state, and he's not here today, but he was saying this yesterday, was that Tony Romo, he's like, oh, Tony, he's like, he goes, and Tony Romo's going to throw it back to the studio, and it's going to get intercepted. I was like, oh, shut up, Giants, man. I was like, listen, the dude isn't playing anymore. Can't you just let him go off into the sunset and have a good broadcasting career? You still got to troll him, you know?
Yeah, I saw a similar joke about that, too.
I was, but yes, he is gone. He is done. He is retired. And, you know.
How do you feel about that?
I wrote a post the other day. I don't know. My Facebook got hacked. I don't know if we're friends on Facebook again on my new one, but if not, I can hook that up. But I wrote a post that Tony Romo, I guess the best way to describe him was he's the only professional athlete that I've ever seen on a team that I root for that could make me jump for joy and scream and freak out and make me absolutely elated, but also rip my heart out of my body while it's still beating in the same game. Okay?
Yep.
And he's the only polarizing player to ever be able to do that, at least to me, from a team. Because when I was young, part of the reason that – sorry, hold on.
I'm actually reading your post right now. It's very nice.
Okay, yeah. Part of the reason that I liked the Cowboys was Troy Aikman. And I was real young. I was young, but Aikman, well, you know, I know he had his ups and downs, but me being a little kid, the way that the broadcasters made it sound is Aikman never made a mistake. Aikman was a god, okay? Then I go through the Quincy Carter days and the nobody days, and then all of a sudden, Tony Romo comes out of nowhere. So at this point, I'm in, you know, late high school, late high school, early college, and I'm like, wow, you know, Tony Romo, this kid's undrafted. You know, and I still remember the game when Bledsoe went out, and he came in and won the game and was the starter next week. and I was like, wow, this kid's undrafted, came out of nowhere. And, you know, there are a lot of highlights. I know people give him flack, but there are a lot of highlights. And I'll try to send one over to you when we're off the air here that made him special. One of them was against the Rams when the ball was snapped over his head. Ball was snapped over his head, rolled 50 yards behind him. Okay. He picked it up. Well, not 50 because they were at midfield. So maybe like 35 yards behind him. He picked the ball up back at like the 12 yard line. Okay. And was able to run for the first down.
That's crazy.
And now that was back in Tony's, you know, that was his third or fourth year in the league or something. So he was still a spring chicken at that point, but you know, just some of the plays in the pocket, that filthy spin move. I have another one that I can show you where arguably, you'd say probably the best defensive end in the league, J.J. Watt, right?
Yeah. I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have a play where his spin move makes J.J. Watt look stupid.
That's funny.
Just filthy. Filthy. And, you know, some of those things. So, you know, he shattered every Cowboys passing record. You know, one of the top quarterbacks statistically in the league. The problem with him is, and this is why I feel so bad for him, because the talent that he had around him compared to the talent that's there now, if Tony had this team in his heyday, he would have three rings already.
Yeah.
Okay, but the problem is that he had to score 40 points a game per game to win games.
Right.
And, you know, he had to throw for 5 touchdowns and 400 yards every game because he had nobody – because every single time they'd be late in the game, the defense would give up a touchdown.
Chris, so, can I interject real quickly about your Facebook post, though? Did you mean to type the word homo?
No, did I say that?
Yeah, it says, I would have liked to see him get a Super Bowl, but that jive against Philadelphia this season when he came in and scored on three plays solidified the legacy of homo.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, H-O-M-O, dude. That's just homo.
Oh, I did not see that.
That is nice. Sorry to interrupt. I thought you might want to know that, though.
Maybe I should start proofreading. Okay.
I'm like, wait, is this some inside joke? I'm like, is that like a nickname they have for him? Nope, just a bad typo.
No, I'm
going to
go on and, I'm going to go. I don't think anybody else really noticed because, I don't know. Anyway.
No one commented on it.
He had, you know, all these passing stats and all these things. Then Dustin and I kind of teamed up on this Giants fan who commented on one of my Romo posts. But, do you guys see that?
No, I didn't.
So I was like, yeah, you know, I'm upset for it. Honestly, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that if Tony Romo had Tom Brady's team and Tom Brady's system, if you put Tom Brady on the Cowboys and you forgot who Tom Brady was and Tony Romo was your quarterback out there, Joe, I think it would have been just as successful. I really do.
Well, that's your opinion. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Jeremy, we can hear you.
Oh, I can hear you now. Hey, guys, the Kinetic School of Broadcasting put out a post, the picture of us.
Oh, really?
They did?
I just shared it. Yeah, I'm going to share it from the sports pod, too. The picture of us in the studio.
When the hell was that? Was
somebody
took a picture?
It's Brianna, Jeremy, Joe, and Chris. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Dustin just liked it. I just shared it. CBS grads Chris McSwiggin and Jeremy Bloom recording a sports podcast from our all-noise radio studio. Check it out at
www.overtimenews.
It's a little bit outdated with the Overtime News link, but then a few hashtags. So, yeah, I'm going to like that, too. Like page. Okay, anyway. Sorry. I thought you guys might want to know that, too.
I got to update my face. I got to upgrade my Facebook thing. I ain't seeing that.
Chris, did you do your Grind Your Gears segment? Did I miss it?
No, we haven't done those.
No, I was waiting for you.
Oh, I got one.
That's
annoying me for last week.
Do you
want
to do yours first?
Yes, I'll do it.
Okay, and is this a good Grind My Gears, or is this kind of meh?
I don't know if you guys follow the sport as much as I do, so I don't know if you're going to get it, but you might.
What's
it's about college basketball. College basketball.
Okay.
You know what really grinds my gears? You, America. Fuck you.
Okay,
so
go.
Georgetown hired Patrick Ewing to be their coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I am completely and utterly baffled by this. These colleges think that they're living the glory days of when their schools were great. Patrick Ewing went to this school 32 years ago, okay? He hasn't been on a college campus since 1985. The guy has been an NBA player since forever. He's been an assistant coach in Orlando for like forever. You're telling me this guy is going to go out and start being able to recruit players? I mean, I don't understand what they're doing at this school anymore. I don't know. You think that Patrick Ewing is going to get you McDonald's All-American to come there? I don't understand because he's not going to come there. He has no college.
People are
going to
want to play for a former NBA player and a Georgetown legend.
What?
I'd play for him.
So he has no idea. He has no college coaching experience. He has no idea. He's never recruited ever.
When do you need college coaching experience? All you need nowadays is to recruit the best possible players.
That.
They're going to be on campus for 6 months anyway.
Yeah, I'll find that. These schools tend to think about their heroes coming back to school and trying to resurrect their schools. It's not going to work. Chris Mullin went to St. John's. They've been a dumpster fire for 2 or 3 years. So you got to be buyer beware when you bring these old glory guys back from the past and think they're going to turn around your school in 2 years. It ain't going to happen, man. And I think this was a bad idea, just a bad idea. They need to hire somebody fresher, younger, that knows the game. Patrick Ewing has been an NBA player, fine, okay, but he hasn't been in the college game in 32 years. I think it was a terrible hire. I think they're going to be in trouble for the next 5 or 6 years. He's going to get fired in 3 years. Mark it down, all right?
3 years.
You think so, huh?
Yes. Well, how long do you think they get? They don't give college coaches much time. It's like a 5-year window, and they're done. If you can't do anything after 3, forget it. That's what college coaches do nowadays. They jump ship as fast as you can. But Patrick Ewing, I'm floored. That's like you might as well have UConn have Ray Allen coach the team. That's what it's like. Oh, please. Oh, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I'm finished.
Yeah, I mean, it is a system. It is a business. And now, why am I not tagged in this photo? That kind of pissed me off. Jeremy got tagged, and I didn't get tagged. I'm not even mentioned.
They recognize the real talent, Chris.
I didn't go to the school.
They don't know who you is, Joe.
Yeah, well, it's about time they do.
Look at that photo.
It looks like you were talking. Yeah.
I am. Well, when don't I talk?
No, not you,
yeah, right.
Joe. It looks like Joe was saying something, and that's what it looks like in the thing here.
It does. It looks like I'm gesticulating. That's not a bad word.
That is beautiful.
Did you say gesticulating?
Look at that.
Gesticulating.
Have you ever seen baldness look so goddamn sexy? Like, that is outrageous.
Only in Michael Jordan, maybe. But that's about it.
You got that right.
Yeah.
You got that right.
Yeah.
Can you hear me all right? I'm out of the hospital. I'm in the car waiting because I'm going to
go crazy.
You sound
much better.
I hear you.
You don't understand how I had to be so goddamn quiet, which is impossible. I had to be in a whisper, which I don't know what the hell that even means. Holy Christ. I'm going crazy.
Get out of there. The best thing you ever did.
What is it? Inside voices?
She's in now getting it done.
Yeah.
I'm in the car. So
yeah, you were using your inside voice. In there,
yeah,
your sedated voice.
No,
this is the real Jeremy.
There it is. I don't know how people do that. I can't talk like that. I'm loud and obnoxious. I've been that way for 36 years. It ain't gonna change now. I can't be quiet. I don't know if I can be quiet. I know. I'm gonna be sick.
Feel better to be out here speaking like you usually do.
Are you Italian by any
chance? Complaining about Romo. What'd you say?
I said, are you Italian by any chance?
No, I'm not Italian. I'm Irish.
Okay, well us Irish people aren't always loud and obnoxious unless we're drinking.
Yeah. Well, that's weird because I'm not an alcoholic and I'm still loud. So.
That is weird. You're very strange. You're very strange. Yeah, you're very weird.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
So, Jeremy, you were on the thing. You saw the thing. Yeah. Brianna's in a relationship now, so she doesn't have time for
it. Yeah, I saw that.
I'm stunned.
I think she's taller than him.
Is he all right?
She's taller than him, I think.
Oh, really?
She's taller
just
than
saying.
Guys.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, she's pretty tall for a girl. She's got to be, what, about 5'8", 5'9"?
Yeah, yeah. She's sitting down in this picture, and he's standing next to her, and she just looks like if she stood up, she would dominate him. I don't know.
So what do? You like check out her Facebook page like every day? Like what do you do?
Oh, it just happened to pop up on my feed, for real.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Not the only
pop
up, though.
Oh,
please, I know. Please.
Oh, boo.
Give me a break. Unbelievable. So what did I miss? You talk about Romo retiring finally?
Some Red Sox. Talk some
Chris
about Sale. Talk some Celtics.
Did you guys see that? Oh, I'm not even talking about the Celtics. They are still not ready for the – oh, please.
Well, Chris, but the question you asked me, would you posit that towards Jeremy about are they cruising, you know?
Oh, okay, the Celtics. I said, are the Celtics,
yes.
Because they've been so beat up, the past couple of years going into the playoff back-to-back sweeps after a grueling regular season, this team sort of coasting into the playoffs with a guaranteed top three slot and just kind of coasting to get ready for the playoffs, or are they just not as good as we think they are?
Well, yeah, I got to be honest with you. I don't think they're coasting in, because if they were coasting in, they'd be 7-8 games ahead and they would be tanking games at the end of the year. I don't think it's that. I'll be honest with you. I've said this all year. I never thought they were that great. Okay, look, Isaiah Thomas has scored 30 points a game, fine. But there's no other consistent scoring on this team. Avery Bradley was supposed to be, I guess, the second guy there, and he looked horrible against Cleveland.
He's got to be injured.
You know,
yes,
he's still hurt, yeah. And, you know, and I was okay with the Al Horford signing, but I'm like, what is he really going to be? Like, you know, he's not a 20-10 guy. You know,
yeah.
He's not even like Dwight Howard now. He's not even a 14-12 guy. So
he's a really good passer. He's a good glue guy, but he's not.
But is he the go-to guy in the post? He should be, but they don't have it. It's a problem. Like, you know, I don't understand why Amir Johnson is still starting in the NBA. I don't know why this guy is absolutely useless. I don't know why he plays starters minutes.
I know, really.
It drives me crazy. You know, and their bench.
Jeremy, he's not only that, but he's also the highest paid player in the Celtics.
Isn't that unbelievable? I'm floored by that. Listen, I gotta tell you, they got really like, I don't care. They beat Cleveland a couple weeks ago, fine, but whatever. But that was by 4 points. But they really got exposed in this game. I don't know if it was, you know, because they said, you know, you hear Thomas saying it's just a game, it's just a game. Bullshit. This is the most important game of the year. This game is for you to prove if you belong with the Cavs. And guess what? They got a reality check, okay? They got their asses kicked. That 114-91 made it sound like it was even close. After the first quarter, this game wasn't even close, dude. It wasn't even close.
No.
They have no bench. Like, you know, Marcus Smart is okay for – it's like the consistency bothers me. Isaiah Thomas, okay, it's great. But after that, it's like, who do you go to? Bradley plays great defense, but he's not really that great a shooter. Al Horford's got to be the other guy in the post. Who else is there? Jay Crowder's okay in spurts, but, like, what's he going to go to? I really thought Kelly Olynyk was going to be better by now, but he's regressed because I don't think Brad Stevens plays him enough. So it's like, you don't know what to do. This team, listen, if they get in the playoffs, you know, they'll be a two seed. They'll probably play, like, Chicago or Milwaukee. Like that. They might get by then, but after that, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think they're going to get swept. I think the team is better than they were last year. I think Horford is making a difference, but you never know. The NBA is another crapshoot, just like baseball. You never know who's going to win. So who the hell knows?
Right. Well,
I said
that I think that because of in the past, particularly last year, they've had grinding, grueling regular seasons. And that's been part of the reason that they've had good seedings in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Part of the reason
they are the
number two seed is because
they don't
mail it in. They play hard every game. And
you're
that last
right.
year, what they got to the playoffs, Jay Crowder was injured. There's another major injury, which I think Avery Bradley was out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I don't even think Avery Bradley played.
Yeah, that's right. And they got swept. They weren't ready. They weren't healthy. They were ground down to bits.
No.
I think they're trying to do it a little differently this year. You know, Avery Bradley's hurt again, but he's not, you know, DL injured, you know, or injured, or he's doing it in the NBA. He can play, but I think they're watching the minutes. They want to enter the playoffs. Like Chris said, they have a good seed secured here. They don't need the number one seed.
No,
they get it, that's great, but they're not going to sacrifice being prepared for the playoffs for a higher seed this time. So I think that's what we're looking at right now.
Right. My question, though, is how much better is this team than previous years? Listen, 2 years ago,
I don't think they're that much better either, Jer. No.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, 2 years ago, they were 40-42, got wiped out by Cleveland. They shouldn't have been to the playoffs anyway. Don't get me started on that. You know, and last year, they were, you know, marginal. I mean, they were better. I mean, they didn't have a
good
record.
They were like 48 games, 46 games last year, something like that. Yeah.
But adding Al Horford to the mix, I'm sorry, does not put you over the top. And, you know, as much as they give, you know, Ainge gets a lot of credit for a lot of this stuff, but I'm sorry, he has not made a move to me other than when he got Garnett that has made this franchise much better. He got Isaiah Thomas. I don't know how the hell he pulled that one off. That was he got lucky on that one. But what other moves has he made that were great? That bothers me. Is like he's made all these moves, but what moves that benefit this team? They got Garnett. Okay, that was like 10 years ago. But since then, what has he got? He drafted Marcus Smart. I don't know what Smart's going to play in the NBA. Is he a point guard or a two guard? And it's like, you know, he didn't want to trade any of these draft picks. And quite frankly, the kids coming out are playing the same. Like, if they want to take Lonzo Ball or something like that, he plays the same positions half the players on the team. So it's like, why don't you go out and get why can't you go out and get Cousins or something like that? Sacrifice something. You know, this team is built. They're going to be around for 5 or 6 years. They're young, fresh kids. So it's not like you can't – you could sacrifice somebody on this team. I mean, the problem is they don't have a lot of trading chips other than the draft pick. It's like,
you said
who
it wrong,
going to want Jay Crowder and Kelly Olynyk? What?
It's what? Marcus Smart.
Marcus.
Oh, I don't have an accent. I don't have an accent. So it's like, you know, I don't know what Ainge is gambling on, and there's no guarantee they're going to hit them. You know, they have had no luck in the lottery. They might even get the number one pick. You know, and they had the third pick last year. Look what that got them. Yeah.
Well,
right.
Hey, well, wait a minute there. Well, wait a minute.
Well,
I mean, Jaylen Brown.
You think Jaylen Brown's going to be – he's been okay.
Well, he's been one of the best rookies from the draft class so far. Right?
I think he's
him,
been
all Jamal
right.
Murray.
I think he's been all right, but, like, I don't know what he's going to be. He's still – listen, this kid's still almost – this kid's not even turned 20 yet, for Christ's sake. He's played 1 year in college.
Nah, he's right. Don't you think someone who's that young and just entering the league the way he has, as from what he's been able to accomplish, don't you think that's pretty impressive?
I think it's okay, but my question is, how long are you going to have to wait for this guy to develop? I mean, you know, your rookie contracts are like 3 or 4 years, and if he takes 5 years, you're going to lose him. So what the hell's the point? Like I'm saying that the lottery thing, if you don't get a top five pick in the lottery, top 3 or 4 picks, it's after that, you have no idea. Last couple of years, the last 3 or 4 picks have been great. So I don't know what he's going to be. Like I'm scared because like I don't know what this guy's going to be because every time they have a high pick like this, it always bombs. You got they traded Chauncey Billups and Mercer that deal. They tried to get Duncan. You know, I mean they got lucky and they hit Paul Pierce in '98. But after that, they've had so many bad picks. I mean they had Jerome Owusu as a first round pick. All right, that's how bad they've been. So I question who when they draft. What are they doing for their homework? Is like, who do they think they need fits a position? I mean, I guess Jaylen Brown fits a small forward position, but I just don't know how long it's going to take for him to develop. That's all I'm saying.
True. Now, what do you feel about the trade scenario that I proposed to Joe that I got my rumors today that I heard might happen? If the Patriots lose Malcolm Butler, there's a chance that they could end up getting Richard Sherman from the Seahawks.
Is that an upgrade? Like am I the only one who thinks Richard Sherman?
I think it is.
I'm sorry,
he's best corner in the league, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is it an upgrade? I'm sorry, but what the hell has Richard Sherman really done, dude, besides talk? Listen, I think Butler's a better player than Sherman is.
Dude,
you know,
he has more interceptions than any cornerback in the league over the past 5 years. He has 30 interceptions. That's 10 more than anyone else. Just saying.
You talking about Butler or Sherman?
Sherman. And I love Malcolm Butler, but I would do a one-for-one trade for Richard Sherman.
You,
I would.
You think,
I would.
You think
yep.
he's that much better?
I think he's that much better. I don't – listen, I think he's – I think he's better by enough that I would certainly do the trade, yeah.
Really?
I'm
not surprised you would do that. You think the thing is, like, I feel like Butler is, like, 7, 8 years younger. He's still got time. It's like, I don't know what you're going to get for Sherman. Like, you know, he's been too quiet the last couple of years. He seems to kind of – so I'm like, does he still want to – does he still have it? Does he still care?
Oh, yeah, no, he still has it. He's played every game. He hasn't missed a game. In his NFL career,
I feel like he's gone away because like you don't hear about him anymore. Something just like I haven't heard anything in a couple of years. It seems like.
I'm
not surprised. So you're saying like would the Patriots trade Sherman straight up for Butler? I don't see why they wouldn't do it. I mean, I think it'd be a little bit of a gamble. I mean, not a big gamble, but if it makes a team better, that's what they always do. So it wouldn't surprise you if they made it. I'm glad they didn't do the Butler for Brandon Cooks trade. I thought that didn't make any sense, truthfully. And they got Cooks anyway, or Crooks, whatever the hell his name is. I don't know. I don't know about Sherman. Sherman's like, I don't know. Like, I don't hear him chirping enough anymore. Like, I feel like he's kind of gone away. So maybe if he goes to New England,
he's
definitely.
I'm going to pull up Jeremy, I'm going to pull up Sherman's stats just because to see if you're accurate.
I'm not saying
I'm
he's not
sure
an elite
either.
Player. It's like, I don't, the thing is like, I think maybe the more you win, the more successful you are as a player. Like, you know, he's been, those couple years of Seattle Super Bowl, all you heard about was him. He was in commercials for soup and shit. You know, and like his productivity, I don't think anybody kept track of his productivity, how great it was. Listen, you can intercept the ball all you want, but that doesn't mean shit, dude. You still got to be on coverage. You said you got to be there. You got to call out blocks. You got to know where the guy's going. So I just don't know statistics wise what that means for him. Like, does that?
Well,
as long as he still makes plays, I guess that counts. You know.
Well, let me just run some stats by you, okay? All right. He's been in the league 6 full years. He's played 16 games every
That's
season.
He's played 6 years, really?
Yeah.
He's
29. He just turned 29 a week ago. Okay. These are his interception years from his first year to his sixth. 4.
Yeah.
8. Okay. And that's when they won the Super Bowl. Then 4,
right.
2, 4. Okay, so the interceptions have gone down, but still 4 picks when you're Richard Sherman, who doesn't get a lot of balls thrown his way. That's a really good number. I think 4 interceptions. Now he was getting those 8 interceptions a year back.
I think he would think that that's too low. I think he's not going to get it.
Yeah, he's just not going to get those opportunities. Now, as far as like passes defended, let me see if I need the advanced stats on that.
I understand all the stats. I get all the stats, but I haven't heard his name like called during games anymore. Where it's like everybody's afraid of him, and like everybody wants to go. You know, nobody's afraid to throw to him. I don't hear that anymore. Which I guess I don't know what that means. Like, you know, come on, after the Super Bowl, like this guy was talking serious. Like you couldn't get this guy to shut up, and then all of a sudden, like. I haven't heard about this guy in a couple of years, and I'm not sure what that means. Anything, truthfully, I'm not sure. It's just I'm surprised, maybe because Seattle is kind of falling back a little bit from the pack, like they're not, you know. I think
that might have something to do with it. Yeah. Well, he didn't make the. He wasn't an All-Pro for the first time in 4 years last year.
Yeah.
He was All-Pro 2012, 2013, 14, and 15. That's the Associated All-Pro, and he wasn't last year. So maybe he did have a drop-off last year, Jeremy. He might be on something there. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I just, like, you know, if you're – listen, I know the Patriots, but the Patriots are built, like, I feel like to win now. If you want to win now, fine. You want to go to Sherman, fine. But I know, I just feel like I you know, I'm not a, you know, I'm not a Patriot defender and that kind of shit. I just think Malcolm Butler is too young not to waste on trading to Seattle. And how many years do you think Sherman's got left? 2 or 3 years of elite cornerback? Like, I don't know how, you know, he's not going to play until he's 38 or 39. He's not, I don't, I mean,
no,
he could,
yeah.
But.
Well, he's only,
you know,
what, I just see,
know.
He just turned 29.
You said was.
Malcolm
how
Butler
is
almost
Butler?
Exactly,
how old is he?
Butler is 27.
Okay, so they're around
and
the
they're
same
both,
age? Okay.
They're both almost exactly the age that they are. Malcolm Butler's 27 and a month.
Right.
Richard Sherman is 29 and a week. So they're almost exactly 2 years apart, which is significant.
Well, I'm not gonna go against Belichick. Right. Belichick knows what he wants. He knows what he – listen, if he wants to get Richard Sherman in there, they'll find a way to get him. I'm very surprised they would sacrifice Butler, truthfully. I can't see why you can't send a first and second round pick to get Sherman. I think the Seattle would do that, truthfully. I don't know why you wouldn't want to do that. But I just can't see sacrificing Butler straight up for Sherman. I'm surprised, that's all. I'm pretty much surprised they would do that at this point.
Well, Mike Freeman, the NFL lead writer on Bleacher Report, I read this off earlier to Chris, thinks that he wrote this morning. He thinks that it's not really going to happen. He thinks what Seattle is doing is sort of sending a message to Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
Well, sending a message to Richard Sherman. Yeah, exactly. Like, they're kind of tired of his mouth. Last year there were a couple of sort of clashes with coaching and management about, I think, in the final game of the season or late
game.
Yeah,
that's not good.
He mouthed off about some of their offensive play calling, I think. And, you know, so I think that Seattle's a little bit tired of Richard Sherman being Richard Sherman.
Oh, yeah.
And
kind
of want him to kind of toe the line. And as you know, Jeremy, you said it better than I'm saying, ship up or ship out. And I think that's what they're trying to tell him. So they're not really planning on trading him. They just want him to get in line. So
I tell you, if that trade went down, I'm sorry, but I still feel like Seattle got the better of that deal. You don't know what you're going to get from Sherman. Sherman, I don't know if he's going to keep his mouth shut in New England.
Interesting.
You got Butler, too. Butler, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'd be honest with you, I think it's because I never really thought Richard Sherman was that great, honestly. Like, I don't know, like, playing cornerback in the NFL, how hard is that to play? I'm sorry.
Well, I'll say this much.
When
we played Seattle in the Super Bowl, in that second half when Tom Brady was throwing the ball all over the yard, he didn't throw it to Richard Sherman's side once. And if Tom Brady isn't going to throw a ball in a guy's direction when he's throwing it all over the field, then Tom Brady doesn't want to throw it over there because he knows there's a chance that this guy's, number one, is probably not going to be a completion and it could get picked.
Right.
So if that's Tom Brady's judgment, then that means a lot to me. And now, great that that was two years ago. So I don't know, but 2 years ago, Richard Sherman was awesome.
Do you guys want to hear Jeremy just go off?
Sure, why not?
Always.
All right. I can't wait to hear this. What kind of tease is it? What kind of tease is this?
Ready? Here we go.
That's the one you got to live with.
This is true.
You know, some people like it, some people don't, but, you know, we'll see where it takes us.
What did you make of the Kyrie stuff?
I don't. It's true. The earth is flat.
Shaq, what are you talking about?
The earth is flat.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. No.
Listen.
It's not.
There's three ways to manipulate the mind. What you read, what you see, and what you hear.
Okay. Conspiracies.
In school, first thing they teach us is, Columbus discovered America. But when he got there, it was some fair-skinned people with the long hair smoking out of peace pipes. So what does that tell you? Columbus didn't discover America.
He found where some other people already lived.
I drive from coast to coast, and this shit's flat to me. I'm just saying.
Okay, that's the dumbest thing you've ever said.
I drive from Florida.
It's the dumbest thing you've ever said.
I drive from Florida to California all the time, and it's flat to me.
92 podcasts, and that's the dumbest thing you've ever said. That's a high bar to get over.
I do not go up and down in a 360-degree angle and all that stuff about gravity. Have you looked outside of Atlanta lately and seen all these buildings? So you mean to tell me that China is under us? China is under us.
If you keep
saying
they are under us.
That's
what they tell you when you're a kid.
The world is flat.
If you dug straight through your backyard, you could get to China.
No, you can't.
The world is not flat.
Yes, it is.
We've seen the earth.
No, we haven't seen anything.
Yes, you have.
You've seen it
from satellite imagery.
Oh, satellite imagery that could be drawn and made up.
Okay, so here's the audio of the reporter asking Kyrie that exact same question.
You've seen pictures of the planet, though, right? Like it's a circle. So
I've seen a lot of things that my educational system that was real and turned out to be good.
Exactly.
I don't mind going to Instagram and turning my thoughts.
Exactly. Well, I'm with him because we're from Jersey. That's how we think. We think outside the box.
Tell us about the educational system in Jersey.
I'm just saying.
I think it's more of an indictment on that.
I'm just saying, when I drive from Florida to New York, flat.
Right.
New York to Seattle.
It's
flat.
Not flat.
Seattle down to L.A. Flat. L.A. back in front of flat. It's a, it's a square. That's what it is.
So, gentlemen, apparently,
do you think he's serious?
The only thing flat are his free throw shooting, for Christ's sake.
Oh, nice one.
What the
hell is wrong
with
serious?
Him?
Like in this
day
and age?
Yes.
Oh, my God. What is wrong?
I really do.
Do they not understand that it's not even possible?
Where did he come up with that?
Well, I just love how the guy on the thing was like, that's the dumbest thing you've ever said. He said it
right. That was the guy he was on.
The 92 podcast.
I want to know, where does the water go then? Where does the water go when it reaches the end? That's what I want to know. Do they build up a dam over there?
Oh, my God.
He must have been. Well, Kyrie Irving thinks it's
flat, too. He must
have been
watching Kazam in his car or Steel or some crap to get himself going. Holy Christ.
Kyrie Irving thinks it's flat, too.
Where did he come up with that?
I know.
Well, guess what? Kyrie Irving's an idiot, too. There are two peas in a pod.
He went to Duke.
I mean, I know
he's only at Duke for like 4 months, but he went to Duke.
I'll give Kyrie Irving 24 years old. Kyrie Irving's still a young kid. He's only like 23 or 24 years old.
Shaq's
like sometimes
40.
At that age. Right. And sometimes at that age, Kyrie is like, you still, I don't know, kind of dumb. But Shaq is like our age, you know, he's been around the world. Like, you at this point, you stop thinking those stupid thoughts when you were a young kid. Like,
He cares at this point, Joe. I don't think he cares. He's like, I've done my time. I've played whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think he cares anymore. I think it's hilarious. I think it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. But, I mean, that's how you get people going. That's why this
Jack's a riot. I think he's hilarious. You know.
I wish he would put this much effort to learn how to shoot free throws. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, right?
This guy would have been the all-time leading scorer in the NBA, man. I'm telling you right
or
now.
Staying in shape in his later years because he was big. If he'd shed another 15, 20 pounds, he could have stayed around and been so much more impactful for an extra few years and solidified his legacy as the greatest big man of all time.
Well, yeah, he's up there, though. I mean,
he's up there. He's not deep, but he's up there.
I've never seen a guy like him, though. He built six brick walls.
What a force.
Unbelievable.
Those years,
you know, and he had a pretty decent touch.
And Orlando.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he could get up. He had nimble feet for a 7-foot, 350-pound son of a bitch. He could really get around down there.
Fat, dude. When he first came out of college, he was only about 250. He didn't get to beat three Bills till like halfway through his career.
Right.
And then,
that's what I'm saying.
Who the hell guard? And who can guard him? Who the hell can guard him that size? You have nobody in the NBA that, like, other than Oliver Miller, I can think of that was his size that could guard him. So who the hell can guard him? That's why he was so great.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a waste.
Yeah. I know. Well, he was great, he won three championships with the Lakers. So, I mean, he certainly got a lot done. He was he was pretty special for a period of time. But yeah,
you
have
to
do it for you.
Oh, Christ. Yes.
Mississippi State.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
you needed that, didn't you?
Do you think I care?
I've been de-feathered, frankly.
Do you think I care if they lost the game? I don't really care. I don't care if they lost.
Sure you do. You care. You secretly care.
I'm glad Emma has been the big puffy peacock.
I was surprised they lost, truthfully, but I don't really care if they lost. I mean, they broke all these. They were working on borrowed time. If you ask me, you already broke all these records. So like, I thought to myself, well, what the hell's the point? You already broke these records. So who cares?
So nobody, Jeremy, you say you don't really care. So where does your fandom of UConn women's basketball lay? You're sort of a fan, but not a real, like a big time fan.
I've been watching UConn basketball since I was a kid. I started watching in 1990 when the men's team had that.
You're a much bigger fan of the men's team than the women's team, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you, in my lifetime, I think I sat through two women's basketball games. I know they're around. I know a couple of people's names. I honestly, to be honest with you, I'm not gonna lie to you. I watched a couple of them. They had some really good looking broads on there. Oh my God, I'm gonna be started with that.
Yeah.
But I can't get into it. It just bores me watching it go. They don't do. I mean, I know it's a woman.
They'll
I understand.
Bounce pass.
I can't get into it.
Jump
you know,
shot.
And once they broke all these records, I'm like, okay, that's an accomplishment as it is. But it's like I don't care. Like I'm sad those kids lost. They put a lot of heart and effort into it. You know, people don't realize that this year really wasn't their best team. Like, I mean, they won all these games. I was surprised they did this, truthfully, because. They lost like the three best. They lost their top three players, the kid Stewart, were the top three picks in WNBA draft last year. I don't know.
Dory Emma. He's a great coach, that peacock.
So it's like, please. He's a
peacock. He looks like a puffy peacock, man. He just looks so smug with his big ass caught around. I don't like him.
Yeah, but like, you know, I understand, like, it's a big deal for the kid. I think they're probably like, the other kids, it's such a more big deal because when you break this record, it's like, you know, when the kids beat them, it's like, oh, it's great. But, you know, I found it stunning. You know, Mississippi State won a game. And then the following, you know, they went on such a high from that game. They went out against South Carolina and got their asses kicked. So it's like, well, what the hell is the point?
Right.
But seriously, if you're going to win, you know, and what record, if it was for the championship, okay, fine. They beat them in the Final Four, but they didn't win nothing. So it's like they broke the record. So it's like, okay, fine. But if that was for the championship, I would have been more impressed, truthfully, because then I would have been like, they beat him when it counted the most. But they still know the game to play, and they got their ass kicked by South Carolina. So it's like, well, what's the point now? And now it's like, you know, nobody's going to care now. You know, they're going to go back to.
They lost by two.
I'm talking about Mississippi State lost to South Carolina in the championship game. If they didn't get blown out or anything like that, you know, so it's unbelievable.
Well, gentlemen, I think that's a wrap for today.
I think it
Chris?
Is. And I think I think Shaq thinks the earth is flat. And I think we will possibly see you guys on Monday.
All right. I got to go pick up the wife.
Goodbye. Have a good
weekend.
Bye.
Wait, can we leave on this?
Rivera is set.
Goodbye.
Nope. Here's the
payoff.
I gotta go.
Swung on and flat of the second. Ah! Cano fields. Throws to first in time. Ball game over. World Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.